All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Pseudo Intellectual Live. Today, we have my friend Chrissy Mayer. She is a comedian and podcaster. You may have seen her on Friday Night Tights, Compound Media, and she's probably one of the funniest women out there, in my humble opinion. Please welcome to the show, Chrissy. Chrissy, oh, it's been so long since we've done a podcast together.
Lauren, I'm so excited to be here. The last time I saw you was in Phoenix for the Turning Point AM Fest.
Yeah.
That was a thrill.
I ended up being sick the whole time. That was kind of a bust on, you know, like work-wise, but it was great to see you, and Ryan Kinnell was also there.
Yeah. That was great. Yeah, you sick is still like more stunning than most of us on our best day. You're like, I'm under the weather, like checking into the hotel, no makeup, and you're still like,
ah. You're too sweet. And actually, speaking of that, I apologize if my voice is scratchy or if I'm like blowing my nose through a stream. I am once again sick. I feel like, so I was sick, got a little bit better, sick again. I was traveling with a toddler, and I feel like when you do that, it's your immune system becomes like one of those bubble boys. It's like all of the pathogens in my mouth. So
I imagine it's just constant hands licking and going against surfaces and then going into your mouth. It's just probably a steady stream of that.
So 100%. My daughter, she likes a lot of toppings on her food. So like she'll drop something in a very public place, and instead of like just going for the other noodles or whatever she's eating on the plate that are clean, she's like, no, I want this specific one. This is the one that I want with some, you know, dog hair, who knows what on there. So it's good. It's a good time.
She likes a lot of toppings like dog hair.
Yeah.
Like floor crumbs. Oh, no, how old is she now?
She's almost two. She's going to be two in April. And you're far along as well. Yeah. Very exciting.
I did a podcast yesterday with a friend who's a dad, and he was like, how far along are you? And I was like, 32. He's like, oh, he's cooked. You know, the idea that he's ready. I mean, he's already head down, which I thought was so cute. I'm like, oh, he's getting like ready. He's getting ready.
Yeah. You know? He's ready to shoot out.
It's so scary though. It's my first one. So I've never changed a diaper, Lauren. Like people aren't just handing me their babies and then walking away for extended periods of time.
That was basically me. I know we have some friends in like our little mom chat who were looking up like birthing videos, parenting, pregnancy classes. I was the opposite. I was like, you know what? I don't want to freak myself out with the birth. So we're going in blind. It's going to happen regardless, right? I mean, people in African villages manage to have kids without like Lamaze classes. So it'll like, I was just kind of trusting the process. And it's like, it's great because I had no fear or nervousness up until the birth. But then as I started like actively going into labor, I was like, wait a second. Wait a second.
Well, I have time to Google. I have time to watch a YouTube video.
Yeah. But anyway, it's going to happen. It's going to be, you know, it's different for everybody, but you're going to have a baby at the end of it. And then, you'll have plenty of time to practice changing diapers.
I'm so excited. I finally stopped Googling tearing videos. So that's my form of self-care.
Very good. Actually, like speaking of how your pregnancy journey is going, something I definitely want to talk to you about is that you got pepper sprayed. Not something that usually happens with pregnant women. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. On one hand, it was very surprising, but on the other hand, it wasn't. It seems like for the past few years, I have had a steady stream of people calling venues before I perform, either trying to get it canceled or just trying to screw it up in some way. I know that this is I've had people call in advance when I was in Buffalo, Syracuse, at this very same venue, TIFFs in Morris Plains, New Jersey, Hyenas in Dallas. Sometimes when I get to a venue, they'll be like, we got a lot of calls about you this time. And sometimes it's more following if I have like a viral moment or a joke that pisses people off. You know, it's very common that the venue will get those types of emails and calls before I perform there. And sometimes they'll tell me directly, and then other times like they'll tell Frank, and then like Frank tells me after the fact, like we had a lot of complaints. I've never been pepper sprayed. Like no one's ever kind of messed with a like a venue in that kind of way. And probably the biggest thing was when I had this sort of viral heckler moment back in May, where these women stormed out, said "F you, transphobe," this whole like the Dylan Mulvaney. It wasn't even a joke. It was a riff. A guy in the crowd was, you know, I was like, why has it been a year of girlhood and still no tits for Dylan? Some guy was like, because he's a man. And I was like, yeah, because he's a man. And then these, what I affectionately call the blue-haired land whales to my left were like, no, actually, she's a woman. And this is what I caught on tape and what I ended up posting and went a little bit viral. I said, it's fine. It's America. We can all have different beliefs. Some of us can believe in reality. Some of us can't. And I'm trying to smooth it over. I'm very bad at throwing people out. I always think I can try to charm them or smooth over the situation. And but these women did get up eventually after, of course, they finished their tater tots. They left and then pushed all the shirts off my merch table, complained to the general manager.
Oh my gosh.
So I thought that was the worst thing that could happen, to do some refolding. And I was like, who knows? Maybe they were upset that it didn't carry a 4X in a t-shirt. You know, maybe I didn't have their tarp size. So this past Saturday, and again, like, this is, you never know like what people are pissed off at for you. After the Super Bowl, I had kind of retweeted a joke that I had put out years ago when the Black National Anthem first became popular.
You know, I still haven't heard that.
Oh my God.
I've seen clips circulating of it, but like, I've never bothered to actually click it.
It's so that's circulating again because it was a Super Bowl.
Is it rap? I assume it's rap.
Very forgettable song. It's I've heard people describe it as like a Mariah Carey B-track, B-side okay. or something. So I quote tweet the video. I go, oh, wow, I just figured the Black National Anthem was just sirens. You know, years old joke. I kind of retweeted it again. That got me a lot of shit because when it was the Super Bowl, beginning of February,
right?
It made its way over to very mysterious Black Twitter. Had a lot of people saying, oh, she's racist, or oh, this thread of comments in the tweet is racist. Some lady was like, I tried calling the venue, meaning Morris Plains at TIFFs. I tried calling the venue, but you know, it's white owned. I'm going to go for her baby registry next. So I had Black Twitter coming after my baby registry. And then, of course, I have the best, funniest people who follow me, because then you see the comments are like, well, Black women have always been great at canceling babies. Sometimes people are saying things that are funnier than what I could come up with. So everyone's just so funny. Twitter's great. Anyway, so the show happens on Saturday. It's me, my friend Keanu, who opens for me on the road all the time. Her fiance Gina was on the show, and my other friend Andrew, who's on my Compound Media show on Mondays. We do the show. It's about 10:15-ish, maybe 10:30. And I never charge for these post-show meet and greets. I'll spend an hour or two talking to people if they want to buy a shirt, if they want to get a picture or whatever. It's a lot of friends who sometimes come in from out of town, or people like, oh, I've been following you for, you know, it's like, I want to meet these people. I want to spend time with them. And so it's about 10:15, 10:30. And then I'm talking to a friend. I just start laugh coughing. And I started going into like a coughing fit, and I'm drinking water thinking like, why am I doing this embarrassing coughing fit? And then I'm like, is something kind of burning in the kitchen? I go into the green room. I was like, oh, maybe the green room's attached to the kitchen. I come out of the green room. When I come out, 10, 12 of us are all coughing. And then I have like literally like breakup mascara tears streaming down my face.
The
like,
Joker look.
Like porn tears, you know? Like my eyes could not stop watering. So it's like my eyes are like juicing like crazy. Many of us are coughing. And then I hear my friend Keanu go, Chrissy, like, we have to get you out of here. She's like, I think I know what this is. Someone's like, maybe it's pepper spray. Maybe it's a pepper spray bomb or whatever. And I'm just trying to process. I'm like, is this what's happening? Is it just me? And no, this is happening to everybody else here. So we're all rushed outside. We're outside, and I don't bring a coat. I'm just like, oh God, let me grab my phone, my wallet. We're outside 20, maybe 30 minutes. I see Hotep Jesus because he came by the show because he's going to host the Grifties at this same venue in a couple of weeks. So I said hi to him, hi to a couple other fans. There was a guy who a lot of folks did suspect who came into the show like 20 minutes before it ended, hands in his pockets, backpack. And at this point, when something sketchy like this happens, you're looking around like, who do we suspect? Because obviously if someone had come up and like sprayed me in the eyes, I could describe them. I would like to say I would tackle them, but I probably would have been in shock that I wouldn't have done anything. Because you just, of all the things you expect to happen, this was not on my list of things to expect. So there are a few, so after 20 or 30 minutes or so, I'm talking to this kind of, a few other fans, this kind of loner guy. But again, there's a lot of weird people, you know what I mean? Like, you can't really, it's hard to know who to suspect, so.
Right, it's hard to look at someone and be like, okay, you look like you probably
right.
I was like, gas a pregnant
you're
woman.
Brown, you know?
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, you're kind of seeming like a minority. I mean, people in the chat are saying sounds like tear gas even, or.
Yeah, so we waited some time. My father-in-law who drove me to the show, he ended up like not being affected at all. I don't know. He had some sort of boomer immunity.
Well, I know for tear gas, there are some people who are just immune to tear gas. I was watching this this like documentary about soldiers who go through boot camp, and apparently sometimes they actually like tear gas them just so they know what to expect. And there was this one drill sergeant who was just like totally fine, not affected at all. So maybe that's
maybe
your father-in-law.
They should do this when people go, I want to pursue stand-up comedy. Maybe they should be a sort of comedy boot camp where they're like, all right, let's put you on stage. Let's have someone throw half a sandwich at you.
You're going to be
chew at you. Let's get you pepper sprayed. How do you deal with being canceled by woke mobs? So he had packed up all the shirts. And I'm packing up. I go back up to pack up my camera and laptop because I was recording. And there's still sort of remnants in the air. I'm talking to Keanu and Gino. And all of us are talking. Plus, I talked to the owner Sunday morning. He called me. It could have been a few different things. Because, again, I didn't see, nor was I looking for somebody like running away, acting sus. But it was on the second floor of the club. So it's not like someone could have walked in, sprayed, walked out. They would have had to walk in, go up the stairs, spray, and then walk out. It could have been someone who like sprayed and walked away. It could have been someone who came in after the show just to do that and then left. They could have sprayed in the bathrooms, like just an arm in the bathroom, spray, and then the doors sort of could have wafted it out. I don't think it happened in the one theory someone had was like, well, there was a drunk table beefing with another table that had shushed them. If that had happened in the comedy room, I don't think everybody in this hallway would have been affected at the same time. So it's really hard to figure out what happened. And I don't think there were cameras in this hallway where this sort of meet and greet was happening. So again, like I'm shocked and I'm not shocked that something like this would happen because of just the backlash I get from certain jokes. And I think also my kind of online persona might seem edgier or boundary pushing than my actual set. But again, everyone has difference of opinions. I've had people say, oh, wow, like this joke that you did on stage really pushed it. And then I've had some people say, oh, I thought you were going to be more political or more edgy on stage. So you really never know what's going to piss people off.
That's so crazy, the fact that as a comedian, someone who tells jokes, you could not only be pepper sprayed, but you could also be like, I don't even know what it is specifically that got me pepper sprayed because people are so upset about everything. And that's terrifying.
Yeah.
That's actually terrifying. Are you going to have security at your events? Like extra? Because I assume there's always like a bouncer at least in these places, but like, are you nervous going back on stage? Because we've also seen like Dave Chappelle has been attacked. There's been like a number of comedians, and there was even like a viral clip that I saw not long ago where I'm not exactly sure of the context, but basically there was a comedian and then all of a sudden he gets rushed off stage and everyone's told to leave. And I'm guessing that there was some sort of security thing, but it seems like this is becoming a trend.
Chappelle, I think someone had a knife or a shank or something. And he's got all of the money for all of the security. And I think I go back and forth. It's probably the imposter syndrome on whether I'm like big enough to need security. And it's like, you know, especially Frank and other people close to me are like, Chrissy, yes, you're at that point. Like people like, look, these are how many followers you have. This is like the shows are getting more and more sold out, things like that. So, yeah, I think it will have to be something that I'll just have to hire like a physically imposing looking person to have at every show. And then I think back to my LA show, or was it Sherman Oaks, where, and it was kind of outside in a big tent, and some, I think possibly homeless crackhead ended up punching out an audience member. Like, he was heckling from outside the show, just hanging onto the fence. And some guy tried to stop it, and then he, you know, knocked that guy out and then ran into the night shirtless. So these things can happen inside the venue, outside the venue.
That's crazy. And I believe the politically correct term you're looking for is person of crack instead of crackhead. I
think that's POC. What they
prefer. Yeah, POC. but that's insane. And so we've gotten to a point where, yeah, people will not only be angry about jokes, but they're actually willing to fight people over it, even including pepper spraying a pregnant woman.
And it's the comments that you'll see in either my thread and then Twitter put me in Twitter jail because I used the Melanie Mac word, the FAG word, to describe, because this was a cowardly move. This was a pussy move.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, if I were to pepper spray a pregnant woman, I would at least do it to her face. You know, I would
during the show so I can make jokes about it.
Yeah. You're right. It's absolutely like literally the most cowardly attack you can think of.
It really is. And so I was in a little bit of Twitter jail for a few hours. Was it yesterday? I think, because people met. And of course, the context is lost when you're mass reported. But anyway, you can see from just the thread or the quote tweets or the reactions from my post about talking about what happened to me, you see a lot of people going, this is what you get. This is what you deserve. You reap what you sow. And you.
So basically they think it was like justified, at least in some way, or you should expect it.
Truly people who think that this is what I deserved. And when you have a group of people who think that words equal violence, they will respond to words with that. When you equate words with violence, they will respond to words with violence, because in their mind, they're one and the same.
Right, because in their mind, it's not an escalation, because you've already attacked them with your words, so they might as well just respond in kind. What do you think is, I guess, the start of this? Was this just, you know, social justice? Is it the media that's also kind of complicit? Because I feel like, especially when we're talking about Ricky Gervais or Dave Chappelle, a lot of the access media who usually reports on these types of things, they are very, that's how they say it. Like, it is an attack on LGBT, whatever people. They're not just saying like, I find these jokes distasteful. They very much use the rhetoric of this is attack. It's basically violence and things like that.
And I saw it in the responses. People were going, I know you got pepper sprayed, but did you really have to say the FAG word? Like, did you? They're making it sound like that is worse than what actually happened for all of us.
The tweet, not the actual violent act. It's the tweet.
You really have to say it. Yes, I did have to say that. I needed to. And I'm using it in the colloquial sense, like we all did. I'm like, hello, were we not alive in the 90s when people used gay and all these different words to describe behaviors instead of people? I'm not specifically calling out a gay individual. Kind of a rainbow gang member. I am saying that these behaviors are gay. Like, this was a faggy thing to do. Okay. This was a, like, these are the behaviors of someone who is a coward. And of course they don't care about context. They go, oh, people get very excited. Oh, you said the word. Now I can mass report.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters. I think it is, to answer your question. I think our politicians have made this okay. I think media has made this okay. Think about just a few years ago when it was Maxine Waters talking about, like, if you see these politicians outside or in the street, you need to make them uncomfortable.
That's
you need
right.
To disrupt them. Think about, you know, there was incidents where like a politician was attacked during a softball game. They have for years now been incurred. It's like the TDS has kind of sloshed over into just TDS of anybody who thinks differently than me. And these kind of acts have been encouraged by our leaders, by our representatives. and these groups have been emboldened even since like the summer of love. There's so many examples you can cite of like, well, go in, raid a Target, you're gonna get out of jail right away. Or like, go ahead, light up a gas station, like you'll be fine. There are no consequences for these actions. People are not being held to account. So, and they have their leaders kind of encouraging this behavior. So there are a lot of incentives to acting out to people who say things you don't like.
Which is so crazy, because I feel like with so many of these things, it only ever goes one way. Taylor Hansen, I don't know if you follow him, but he recently interviewed a woman who's being sued by the Biden administration for basically just like driving a car with Trump flags next to the Biden campaign bus.
Yes, they're using, like the KKK clause on her.
Yeah, or like that was instituted so people wouldn't literally physically stop others from voting. And it's like, I mean, if you look at like, all the things you just mentioned, Summer of Love, like Antifa, like there's never any consequences for that side. But you know, if you're against the establishment, against the narrative, if you like, I'm not for trespassing, but you look at how the January 6th people are being treated, like it's very clear that someone like you wouldn't be able to, I don't know, go to like a Hannah Gadsby show or Sarah Silverman show and, you know, subject them to the heckling you've been subjected to and have it just kind of go away. No one cares. Like, it's very, very clear. It's a one-way street.
It's absolutely a one-way street. And it's sort of public knowledge that one side can kind of terrorize the other side. And it's okay, because it's this almost like a derivative of the resist crowd. Like ever since Trump won, there was the resist crowd. And this is sort of the ripple effect of that. Like that people think that this is activism. They don't think it's an attack or.
Yeah, which is like, and the resist crowd probably makes me the angriest out of all of the progressive activists, because they think they're the underdogs. Like the FBI is posting in favor of Pride Month, in favor of Black Lives Matter. Like you don't get to call yourself like anti-establishment if literally the FBI and the CIA are like, we are on board with what you're saying. You can't do like, no, I'm sorry. No.
Right. And they don't care that they're not even anti-establishment anymore. They just go, well, our team is winning. We have the power. We have the media behind us. We have the three-letter agencies behind us. They're just not used to being wrong. And the left has had control of the media for my entire lifetime, way before that as well. So it's just these people don't care about. They'll tell themselves they're helping the underdog, they're helping the victim group du jour, but they're just bullies, and they're like, well, we're getting our way, we're winning, we have the authority, so fuck right. You.
We do have some super chats I want to get to. First off, though, Chad is saying, Chrissy, do you call yourself a comedian or a comedian?
I hate comedian. It's just a personal preference. It's like refer to a female midget as like a midget, you know? So I've never liked comedian.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I know it is a word, but I even call like female actors. I don't even use actresses all the time. So, okay. See, chat, she's fine with comedians. So there, Pushups 2345 says anyone bearded and from Oregon is already suspicious. Agreed. Anyone who smells like patchouli, I will add that as well. Yeah. Probably
Pushups was at this show as well. So to the people who say that I'm lying about made this story up for attention, like there are plenty of people who were there who were also coughing or saw other people coughing who had to go outside.
Yeah, and I feel like if you were to make up a story for attention, like a specific, like a hate crime for being a woman would be just so much more profitable. Come on, guys.
Right.
Occam's Razor says, breaking news, Turtle Mitch announced resignation. I did not hear that. I feel like that might be true, though, because I think I saw someone else in the chat mentioning. If so, good riddance. I have my grandmother, my daughter's great grandmother is still alive. She's like 90 now. So older than like the Bidens and the Mitch McConnells, but like I have a lot of experience with dementia and senility, frankly. And I look at people like Biden and Mitch McConnell, and you, like, if you're familiar with it, you know 100% what is going on. But we have these media outlets who are still acting as if, like, well, it's very normal to forget whether your son is alive or not. Like, we've all, that's basically just a stutter. So I don't know what your problem is. Mark Zart says, good morning, hi, Lauren and Chrissy. I hope you feel better soon, Lauren. Thank you so much. I'm sorry for what happened to you, Chrissy. Only an absolute coward pepper sprays a very pregnant woman. I agree.
And another theory was like, well, maybe it went off in someone's purse, or it was an accident somehow. I'm like, or someone just did it to someone. I'm like, why? But why would you do that in a room full of people? And if you stayed and watched the show, you know that I'm pregnant. My basically whole set at this point is about it. So it's like, why would you do that? Or if it,
and
if
I
it
feel
was
like
me
if
and
it
my,
was just my an accident, off, I had pepper spray in my purse, yeah, and I accidentally discharged it, which I'm pretty sure pepper spray is kind of designed so that doesn't happen. I would tell people like, hey guys, let's get out of here. Like,
I would be like,
I'm so sorry.
I'm mortified. I think
but let's
I
leave.
Yeah.
Yeah. Heads up. No, that's so unfortunate. Is baby okay? Everything's all good.
Everything is okay. And again, I would not care about me as a single entity being pepper sprayed. I remember like on January 6th, I would see it. I saw a smoke bomb. I wasn't anywhere near like that it affected me, but it's like, I wouldn't care about me as a single person getting pepper sprayed. Cause it's like, it's not, you're not going to die. But I was so paranoid for a good 24 hours. And like, me and Frank were just like Googling constantly, like what could this be? What could the, if I'm like, is this going to make my baby like fucking more retarded than like, is it going to grow a tail now? Great. Like, and then I have to explain to my son, like, sorry, you have a tail, but I just wanted to do one more comedy show. And then
someone pepper sprayed me because of my hate speech online. But that's right. Your kid's going to be pretty metal. Like, he's in the womb and he's already been pepper sprayed. That's a pretty cool story.
He's going to come out with a white claw.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's so frustrating because, you know, I often hear people say, oh, the culture war, this isn't what we should all be focusing on. This is just a distraction. And part of me agrees with that. But at the same time, like, if you are someone like yourself who's a comedian or someone who's maybe in a field where DEI hiring practices are really popular, it's not easy for everybody to just be like, let's just focus on the bigger picture. Like, this is actually your livelihood.
It's culture. It's like what behaviors have been made to be okay and acceptable versus like 20 plus years ago.
Yeah. What would you say is the most backlash for a joke that you've gotten? Which protected class is the fiercest, would you say?
Ooh, I would say this is a great question. I'm going to say the alphabet gang because and I've also had the Malaysians come after me because I was defending.
That's a very specific group.
I think the woke Asians came after me after I did a Kung Flu fighting like parody video, like right when the pandemic came out. That they were the funniest because they were signing me up for Asian dating sites, like Chinese like higher ed classes, Chinese mailing lists and things like that. I was like, this is clever. I'm like, I don't remember signing up for like ChineseDating.com. And then the Malaysians, that lasted a while. That lasted a good 6 weeks. And that was silly because there was a lot of language barriers, people saying, oh, you're never welcome in Malaysia. I was like, that's literally not even the 200th place I want to visit. So I think I'm good. And sometimes you can have fun with it. Black Twitter came after me after the Black National Anthem thing. I had a fried chicken joke in the summer. Right before I got married, that Keith Olbermann came after me pretty hard for. And then sometimes you'll notice like this is getting a lot of attention, and you look for, oh, this big account retweeted you or quote commented on it. But worst, the alphabet gang for sure.
So like I feel like Black Israelites are very vicious in their comments. They are like very aggressive. I've had a lot of like death and rape threats from them. Cause I've like done videos about how, like, I don't really think Jesus was Black. Like, I don't think that was a thing. But I feel like when it comes to the alphabet gang, they're very feminine in their approach. Like, they're not just going to like death threats or whatever, which is like one thing. They're going to try to get you deplatformed. They're going to speak to your manager. type of thing. Like yeah. they will message your boss, your sponsors, and try to go about it that way.
Yeah. And then I've heard there are some groups that will do very deep dives on your, yeah. I mean, I've already been fired from my main day job for not getting the vaccine. So it's like, you're not going to do that. And it's like, go ahead, try to reach out to Anthony Cumia. See if he cares about a joke, pissing people off. Good luck with that. So I'm yeah. lucky that now I work for people that don't care about that stuff.
Yeah. Do you think this is getting better or is it getting worse, mm-hmm. especially for comedians? Because I feel that I'm kind of two minds. I mean, at once, I feel like we've never been more polarized. It's never been less acceptable to say, you know, socially, you know, even just to make a joke or say the N-word as a white person. Like I grew up in the 90s. I remember like it was obviously still bad to use it as a racial slur, but you could use it in context at least. You could say a joke with it. And we even yeah. have like people like Anna Kasparian, we have on tape saying the N-word, because not that she was calling anyone that or using it as a slur, but it's just, it didn't have the taboo that it does. Like it's never been more just like, don't do it. Don't even lip sync, mouth it. Don't do it. If you're a white person, just leave the room. Basically, I feel like, you know, on the one hand, that's getting worse, but also we see Dave Chappelle, Ricky Gervais, not only are they more popular than ever, they're on main streaming platforms like Netflix. Shane Gillis, who I think is probably one of the funniest people out there, you know, he's back hosting SNL and, you know, making some jokes as you would expect on SNL. Actually, as you would not expect on SNL, but he did. like, which way do you think the tide is turning?
It's interesting. I think it's, yeah, is it better? Is it worse? I think it's definitely getting interesting. Things are getting to a boiling point, especially with when you look at Shane Gillis. I've heard both arguments for, oh, Shane was a puss for going on SNL. SNL's not cool anymore. He already has Netflix deals. He's already on his way up. He didn't need SNL. You know, the cooler thing to do would have been a big F you to SNL. But again, you don't know what's going on in his mind, like what deal he had worked out. I think it says more about SNL had to come crawling back and ask him to come on after what they did to him than it says about Shane for doing SNL. I don't think he necessarily, I think it's a big moment. All those cast members, especially like Bowen Yang, who's Chinese, you know, they all talked so much shit about him when that was happening that, you know, they didn't, he's a actual road tested veteran comic, and I know that they were all threatened at the prospect of having somebody of his ilk, you know, among their ranks, and I think they all danced on his grave when he was fired. So the tension that he had to deal with, the awkwardness of going back, I think he did a great job, all things considered. Some people think he was nervous in his monologue, some people think he did just a regular whatever stand-up set he would do. I think it's overall just a net positive for Shane. It's like, yeah, get your media attention, Shane, get your Bud Light money. Like he's doing great ultimately, but I do think it says more about SNL that they had to come crawling back and invite him on because he's unavoidable, just so popular at this point. And like some clubs, they don't really book based on ideological requirements. They go, who's going to fill the room? Who's going to sell tickets? And that'll be that. But some clubs are really, they've kind of painted themselves into a corner. Like we heard recently about this club in Seattle. I think it's called Capital City Comedy Club. They recently kind of, it went a little bit viral. They just unbooked Kurt Metzger, Dave Smith, Jim Florentine, and Louis J. Gomez, who are all part of the same management. Actually, but I think they polled their either local comics or local community, and it's one of these like safe space, very liberal clubs, and they had to refund tickets. So now we're at a point where a club is consciously making the decision to make less money based on an ideological belief, like, oh, we don't want our own. We know that the woke mob is firmly entrenched in our community or our local comics. So it's like, it's almost like you're being held hostage by these people who are already in your community that you're actually going to turn away business, turn away money, because you're like, you're as a club, I feel like their hands are tied, whether they themselves believe it or not. They're in that area. They have to, well, the safe space, the alphabet gang comes first, screw making money. So the clubs that have drawn that ideological line in the sand are going to, it's going to get to a point where they're going to be like, sorry, we just, we'd rather make money than have it be a safe space. So I think that was a very interesting and telling moment, having this, and all these guys, they found dates, you know, they found clubs that would have them either on that date that they were canceled from, or one that's close to what they had scheduled. They're not really complaining too much. Like, I was just on a podcast with Luis J. Gomez yesterday, and he's like, you know what, like, at this point there are more clubs that won't book me than will, and I don't want to be someone who's just complaining about all the places that won't have me, because when you get to a level where you just, you have your own fan base, you have your own people, you're less reliant on the clubs anyway. You get to a place where you can pay for and rent out your own room or your own theater, have your own festival, which Lewis does with Skankfest. So we're all becoming kind of the less mainstream comics are kind of less reliant on the old model, the old machine, which involves management agents. It's interesting the ways in which you can work outside of the normal path. And something I used to complain about all the time was like, oh, no one will manage me. No one will rep me. God, I can't get booked at XYZ place unless I have a manager. And now I go, that's actually a blessing, because some of these, you look and see what happened with David Lucas, who's repped by, I think, CAA.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know if you're in a moment where you have a joke that pisses people off, if your management pushes you to apologize or not. There are ways in which your management or agents can creatively stifle you or kind of tell you what to say, what not to say. So now I think it's a blessing to not have any kind of mainstream management or agents.
Well, and this is actually a story that I've not told before, but I used to be repped by UTA, which, if you guys aren't in like media, it's one of the bigger agencies. Not only did they never do anything for me, like anything I feel like I've accomplished has just been me. Like they had scheduled like a few meetings for stuff that I guess was a cool opportunity, but nothing ever panned out. But yeah, like they dropped me because it was just like this random account with like 1,000 followers took a clip of me saying that, that one of the reasons why like Scandinavia is different than America is because it's more homogenous, and they dropped me for that. And it's like, okay, but this is,
that's a fact.
That's a fact. And also like, that's not like they were acting as if it was like me signing off on white nationalism. But I feel like the big agencies, they're so committed to just conformity, not rocking the boat, that if you are a personality who, you know, has a really large audience, but they don't like what you say, then they are gonna like put you on the back burner, drop you when any sign of heat or anything like that. So it's just, it's not worth it. And frankly, the way that the entertainment industry, whether that's music or comedy or even like film now, is becoming a lot more decentralized, I think there are a lot of people, like, it's good. Like, if you're creative, it's a lot, you know, in some ways easier or harder, depending on how you look at it, to break into it. But I think it's easier than ever to do it alone.
The model has certainly changed. And now you'll have performers booking weekends who got a huge following via TikTok. I think that's what we saw happen with Matt Rife. Got a huge following on TikTok. And then sold out an entire 2024 tour in 2023.
That's crazy, because I'm not really on TikTok much. If I'm on TikTok, I'm like on Food Talk, I'm looking for recipes or just like baby videos. So Matt Rife, he started exploding on Twitter because of that like DV joke that I did think was funny. And then I watched his special to cut, because you know people were mad about it, so I'm like, okay, I'm contrary and I have to watch it now. And I had no idea who this guy was, and I'm like, he has a huge following of, mm-hmm, I think a lot of women, from what I understand. How do I not know who he is? But oh, it's TikTok.
It's TikTok. I also personally think that they want him to be the new Pete Davidson, because you look at how like the paparazzi is closely following who all he's dating, who, you know, he's just like the new, F-boy of comedy in a sense, but who knows what his values are if he like actually wants to settle down with somebody or not. But like, he's a pretty boy. He's very popular. He has a huge female fan base, which is very uncommon for stand-up. Most women, you know, they have funny friends. I think a lot of women, like, they're seeking him out because they see him exactly on TikTok. A lot of women are on TikTok and Instagram, which is where his stuff has been blowing up, whereas most of my fans are male because they're from either the YouTube space or they're comedy nerds.
Right.
Who are mostly male.
That's interesting. Okay, so this is a bit of a different track, but I want to talk to you a little bit about Taylor Lorenz, because she was, we all know who Taylor Lorenz is at this point. She's still with WAPO, even though she's causing them a headache. I think she might be. I can't check her bio because I am blocked, but she is the person who showed up at a relatives of Libs of TikTok wearing a mask. She was outside by herself. And basically was docs harassing them. And so since that happened, understandably, I think it's safe to say Libs of TikTok has a little bit of a vendetta against this woman who, yeah, doxed her, harassed her family, hit pieces galore, but she's still kicking in the establishment journalism sphere. She did a TikTok the other day kind of lamenting all of these like publications are going under. What's happening? Is this the death of journalism? And she actually had an interview with Libs of TikTok that I thought was really interesting. Is this the face of what I guess females with online following should be, this Taylor Lorenz? Because the establishment seems to love her. She's like an author. She gets a lot of like media airtime from folks like MSNBC. What's happening?
I think
there?
She got to where she was because she's well connected, and she got into these establishment companies, like, yeah, New York Times, Washington Post, because mm-hmm. the old guard that runs these places, like, they're boomers, they're crusty, and they have someone fresh faced like her who wants to handle social media and like the newer stuff that they don't really understand. And she comes off well spoken, she presents well. Who knows, maybe she really is 67, but I think she got to where she was because she wanted to handle things that the old guard and like the newspaper biz like wasn't really equipped to deal with. So she's kind of like this mix between a TMZ and a journalist, and because of social media, journalists don't just do journalism anymore. They're public figures. They want to be famous. They want to be the one to get the scoop or to get the story, and they kind of like make it about them. And we see that with mainstream anchors as well and reporters. So she got to where she is because of that, but she's also known for hit pieces. Mm-hmm. I just did an interview with Ari Jacob, a friend of mine, last night, and Taylor Lorenz came after her because a few years ago, maybe starting in 2020, Ari had this company where she managed TikTokers called Influences. And Ari was actually the one who I think first discovered Charli D'Amelio, who was the first girl to really blow up on TikTok. She then got her own drink at Dunkin' Donuts, which I remember vividly because it was over the pandemic. And I was like, who gets their own Dunkin' Donuts drink? You know, I was like, that should be me. She managed a lot of these TikTokers, and Taylor came after her because she at the time was repped, I believe, by UTA or another competing management firm. And Ari was kind of, I guess Taylor felt competitive with her because of the type of people she was managing. So, and Ari just got out of basically like suing her for defamation and did well enough that she feels like, not that she's bailing out of it, but she proved her point. She got in a few good, punches, as she says, on Taylor. She has a lot of proof of her intentionally wanting to defame and destroy her reputation. So she's dirty and underhanded, and she's very slimy. And so it's just not surprising, like the links that she would go to. Like, she claimed that Ari leaked a TikToker's nudes at one point. It's just crazy. like, she's very dishonest. But she's also very good at writing convincing narratives. So people like go, oh, okay. And I think she comes from like an Ivy League background. She's well connected. So people kind of believed her at first, but now she has become like a bit of a meme and a lolcow. And I don't think anybody at this point takes her seriously.
Well, that's my thinking as someone, you know, from the outside who's not in established media. But again, she still works at Washington Post. She's still like respected enough that she's going to get a book tour. I'm sure she's got like some big agency repping her. And it's almost like she, I think, is one of the people who, for all my criticisms of her, has managed to navigate the fact that journalists are now expected to also be influencers. When I was in college, I had a friend who wanted to be a journalist. She got an internship at the Daily Caller. We met while I was in DC with my internship. I was at Paul Ryan's because I used to be establishment. That's like my crazy college stories, that I used to intern for Paul Ryan and I like met Speaker McCarthy. I got bullied online for that when I posted those photos because they're rhinos. But anyway, she basically became disillusioned with it because she wanted to do my journalism, like actually investigative stuff. But then she, and maybe the Daily Caller might be argued, I like a lot of what they're doing, but perhaps not the best place for like real journalism. But she was kind of disillusioned. She was like, yeah, it's basically you have to be promoting yourself on social media. And this was like, I mean, I'm kind of dating myself, but this was like 10 years ago, right? So I can only imagine how much more it's like, yeah, you want it for the clicks. And she's managed to navigate that well by inserting herself into the story, because there's a lot of great journalism happening, but it's not necessarily the type where you're able to build your own Twitter profile or whatever it is and leverage your name. And she's been lamenting the fact that establishment journalism is dying, but simultaneously on the right, there are so many actually good journalists like Savannah Hernandez, Taylor Hansen, who are going on the ground getting stories. And yeah, they're building out their profiles, but they don't make the story about themselves.
Not at all.
Which is what Taylor Wednesday.
I respect them both so much. Like, just Savannah, just like, she's a tiny little thing. Like, just going to the border.
There's
multiple
like someone
times.
Posting on the side of the road. She'll be like, tell me what you're doing right now. And it's like, girl, run.
Yeah. And she'll just be in like a baseball cap and like sweats. And she really cares. And yeah, it is refreshing. And it's great to see people who are actually doing the real work and not just making it about them and not just like, oh, I want to get famous. And I remember just during the pandemic and lockdowns when I said, oh, I'm not going to perform anywhere that requires a vax. Like, I'm just not going to do it. Thinking everyone in comedy was gonna be like, yeah, me too. And then you realize, like, God, not every comic at all cares about free speech. Mm-hmm. Not every comic will lay themselves down to defend a comedian making a joke that pisses off a group of people. A lot of comedians are just in it for the bag. It's firmly kind of entrenched with Hollywood. They just want to get that TV deal, the commercial, the bookings. Like, if you expect people in your industry to all have the same values, like, you're just going to be disappointed. So, and yeah, it's the same in journalism.
And it's, I kind of looking at people like Sarah Silverman, like Amy Schumer. I don't know if Stephen Colbert, you'd like qualify him as a comedian, but it's been surprising to see that for some people in comedy, they have gone like full steam ahead with not only progressive politics, which like obviously like people can have whatever political beliefs they want, but also the idea that there are things that shouldn't be joked about. There is such a thing as hate speech and you shouldn't punch down. So I did a video on my other channel, Mediaholic, which is just, if you guys don't follow it, you should, entertainment, pop culture stuff. I watched her latest special and some of my most popular videos are just watching bad stand-up and kind of like tearing it apart. But Sarah Silverman has been like actually one of the female comedians that I thought was the funniest. Like, Sarah Silverman show, there are so many, like, she would genuinely make me laugh. And so it was really weird watching her latest special, which is on HBO. There is good content in there. It's not one of those times where I'm like, I didn't laugh the whole time. But it's like, you could tell where she's going hard are the Jew jokes. Because she's a Jew and she knows that she can kind of take the gloves off and say whatever she wants and really be, I think, her authentic self in terms of her comedy. But she's not kind of doing other things, you know, like she would do black jokes before, she would do Asian jokes before, and now those are missing, which is sad.
That's a trend in like kind of leftist comedy. It's like you are not allowed to talk about groups that you're not a part of. You're not allowed any jokes at all, unless, which is like, why creatively stifle yourself in that way? It's like we all are out in the world living. We can see patterns. We can all make observations about groups of people who are not part of what we are. But again, it's like it's being careful. It's like, well, she doesn't want to get canceled. Her management doesn't want her to get canceled. Mm-hmm. And the management is like, well, yeah, if one of my people gets canceled, they've got to fire that person straight away, because then they're worried about all their other clients. They're worried about their good name. But yeah, someone like a mega household name like Sarah Silverman, she's probably just like, well, I have done blackface, and those pictures are widely circulated. Same thing with Jimmy Kimmel. People that have done very cancelable shit that would get them canceled from people in their own group, they go, let me just go real safe.
Yeah.
Then look at Howard Stern. My God. Like, just
Howard Stern, like, that's been insane to me to watch. Probably like, well, one of the biggest 180s. Like, this is the guy, I'm pretty sure it was him, who used to have like a countdown from when starlets would turn 18.
Oh yeah, the Olsen twins. It was like, it was a real event for sure.
Yeah.
So I think these people are just, they're padding themselves from cancellation. They're just tiptoeing around it.
So okay, a couple more super chats.
Sorry, you have someone like Kathy Griffin, who's like begging people to, who's not selling tickets.
God, I forgot she existed.
Who's,
you're
complaining
right
about people not paying to see her? Yet you have venues canceling Kurt Metzger, Louis J. Gomez, Jim Florentine, where people want to see them. So it's very backwards, where these venues and these management teams, they kind of have to make an ideological choice at a certain point. They go, oh God, like, and then, yeah, just Kathy Griffin, like, she looks so lame complaining, like, oh, no one's buying tickets. It's like, girl, be grateful for the time that you had where you were famous. And I mean, I'm sure she's has enough money to live, you know. It's like, either pivot and figure out what people like, or quietly retire. I don't know.
Yeah, because she is someone who, she was like everywhere with the whole like Trump beheaded photo, but I feel like she wasn't able to use that to, like, you can't just have hating Trump as your career unless you're like a very select number of CNN contributors, right? Like, you have to still at least offer some sort of comedy. You can't just have like that be your
and
only thing.
Thought that would be enough for her. She would be like, that tells you how insulated these celebrities and these leftists are. They go, oh, I'm holding a bloody Trump head. I should be good for the next 6 years.
Yeah.
This is what people want to see, right? And then the bulk of America go, actually, no, that's disgusting. And we didn't like you to begin with. And we only watched you because you were with Joan Rivers, who was universally beloved.
So I want to get, I don't know if you've seen, there's this viral video about these women dancing. I want to get your take on it.
I've seen this. Okay.
But first though, K. Max McDonald says, at this point, I never hear of a left-wing comedian or figure being attacked for left-wing views. Was there one such case? I can't think of one even. That's true.
No, they're made to apologize, and they do apologize, and then they're.
But is it for a left-wing view? Like, is it like, If a comedian were to go on stage and literally endorse communism, would there be hit pieces on them? Would the media be like, can you believe this?
No, God, no.
Yeah. I'll Fight You Naked says, we need Rat Tracker and app exposing report, guys. And Row House says, would Chrissy work a college campus nowadays, or is that the worst place on earth for a comedian to play, any college now?
Oh, the last college I ever performed at was Rutgers, just a few years into doing comedy. It's been that's probably was like the 2010s. I think I would. I think it'd be fun to see what it would be like. I feel like I'll do just about like any gig, but a lot of comics won't do them because they go, oh, well, these kids are different. I don't know. They haven't like lived enough life yet to really have a they don't even know. They're still kids. I don't know. On one hand, I would.
So strange, because when I was younger, it was like the stuffy Christian moms who were advocating for censorship, and the college students were like, free speech, let's push boundaries, etc. Now it's like the Christian moms are like, they have their own chickens and they're listening to Alex Jones, but it's the college students who are like, you can't say that. Like, what happened in the span of literally just 15 years?
There were seeds of this. Like when I was in college in like the early aughts, it was more like, cause I graduated a full leftist and feminist and voted Democrat. Just because you think, well, the nice thing to do, who doesn't love the gays? Who doesn't care about homeless people? Who, you know, you just have these kind of vague, when you're a young person, these vague leftist opinions that eventually just wear out over time as you start working and making your own money. But it just, I think social media has really, and the funding behind these things has really ratcheted everything up, like the Soros-funded activism. Basically has really incentivized a lot of it, and just the cranking up of the mob mentality. The Black Square moment was a big one.
We need more right-wing billionaires to fund like subversive movements. I think that's what we need. Like, if there are any, like, you guys need to put your money where your mouths are. Like, I mean, we have some. We have like the Koch brothers are more like libertarian than right-wing, and there are a couple of families out there, but I feel like leftists just care more about their activism. Like, by and large, they will make it their entire life, their entire mission. Even if they have like a full-time job, they'll be an activist version of that full-time job in a way that like conservative or centrist people just don't.
Yeah. Look at how much Biden, the millions, how many more millions he's raised recently. And even Nikki Haley too. A lot of money is coming in for the two of them.
Yeah.
While they're just hoping to bleed Trump dry with all the legal shenanigans. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. I mean, some could make the argument that Elon did that for Twitter. But is that really activism? That's more just like, okay.
Yeah.
Each.
And apparently perfect, now, but. And apparently even, you know, the bundle of sticks word can still get you in a timeout. So I mean, a lot of people, I think it's safe to say that Twitter is much better than it used to be, but it's still not, you know, the free speech bastion that was once promised, like especially since he kind of handed control over to that other woman. Yeah.
Right, you still have the whole, well, you don't have the freedom of reach.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's also been like, he suspended some pro-Palestinian accounts and that whole kerfuffle. And they kind of doubled down on like, here is our hate speech initiative and, you know, goal of combating anti-Semitism. And it's like, but why is it X's responsibility to combat hate speech? I thought Elon Musk, it seems to me that they've kind of pivoted a little bit. Still, leagues better than what it used to be, though. I want your take on this. You have seen this, right?
I have, yeah.
Okay, so this is a video that's kind of been here. We have some white women. Can I make that full
screen?
They're
all wearing, are these supposed to be pinata pants? They all look like they're just,
I don't know.
Pinatas.
So apparently this is like, they're in Louisiana and it's for like Mardi Gras.
It's New Orleans, yeah.
Yeah. So they're, you know, they're dancing.
I at first thought this was a commercial for Stanley. I was like, every girl's got a Stanley cup. These are like indestructible. This is the thermos du jour. We got some chicks. Oh, okay. I thought that was Chick-fil-A. They're just holding their smoothies. They're hurricanes.
But yeah, I mean, a lot of people like this. So there's this one pose. I mean, and this is basically just like how it goes. They're just dancing. The pose that kind of like made this a thing. It's 22 million views. Why don't men want Western women? Apparently it's because of this, and replies to it are kind of split. So, well, this, it does have like 17,000 likes. So 17,000 people are like, yes, you're right. This is why men don't want Western women. I mean, a lot of people in the replies though are like, what's the issue? They are
this
dancing.
So
what are
tame. This is so tame. There aren't titties flying out. No one's twerking in a thong. No one's fighting in an airport. I'm refreshed by seeing a viral video that doesn't have people like destroying a fast food place or pulling a weave out. I'm just like, oh, wow.
We're just literally being stabbed. I feel like I can't scroll X now without seeing some sort of like atrocious violence that 10 years ago would have made me vomit. And now I'm like, must be Tuesday.
Oh, no one's lighting themselves on fire. No one is pulling a kid around by their arm. How refreshing. And I'm just like, oh yeah, this reminds me of like spring break. Again, there's like no asses or tits hanging out. It's just, they're just dancing. But I guess I understand why some people are mad, because it's like, again, like everything else we've been talking about, it's become culturally acceptable to just hate on white people for any and everything.
Well, but I feel like a lot of the people who are hating on this are against the hating on white. Like, we have this take, sluts dancing. How do you know they're a slut? Like, I mean, especially like some of the women in that video, they're just basically line dancing.
I blame MGTOW that the red pill community has kind of spilled out. It's been another kind of cultural force that has made it acceptable to just like shit on women for existing, for being cute. Like, they're in their 20s, they're in college, like they're not at the age where they, oh my god, why are you not home with your kids? It's spring break. Like, just be happy.
Fully clothed. I didn't really hear what the lyrics to that song was, I guess, but I don't know, this was just a really strange, like, I am perpetually online and I am mad about everything. But I wasn't mad about that. And I was kind of like, really? And it got a really strong reaction from some people. Like, and I understand. So I'm a pretty reserved person. So I don't think I've ever publicly danced like in my life. When I was a kid, I did Irish step dancing. But aside from that, like, I'm not in the club, right? And I can understand, like, I wouldn't do that because that's not my personality. But I feel like you can accept that, you know, I wouldn't necessarily want someone who's a little more raucous and outgoing because I'm an introvert. That's totally, I think, fine. You don't need to also add on top of that. And I think the way you are behaving is why the West is failing. So it's a lot of assumptions to put in a little video of people dancing.
You can't blame these 19-year-old women. Like, you don't have enough context to know if they're sluts or if they're, ugh, they're horrible. What school are they from? What are they studying? What are their goals in life? Like, this is a spring break clip where they're being pretty tame. And it's like not even Girls Gone Wild even. It reminds me of that a little bit, but none of them are flashing. You don't see any of their asses. Like, it's pretty wholesome.
Yeah, you can also see what kind of people they are.
I know that if I were in college, I would be amongst these women dancing with my $50 thermos that I probably saved up a long time to buy so I could fit in. Like, they could be doing a lot worse.
Yeah. And I think so people have also mentioned that the caption of that video was, this is why men don't want Western women or something. If these are in fact Southern sorority girls in like college, this is probably the demographic most likely to get married and have kids. Like,
if this is as bad as these girls are acting in college, like, be happy for them. This is extremely tame.
Okay, here we go. Nick says it's because they're jumping around. No, sorry, not all pit bulls. Says it's because they're jumping around to hood rat music. And it's like, look, man, I think there's a lot of assumptions that are being made that I like. Pick your battles. This is what I just don't understand. It's kind of like with the whole trad wife thing. I don't know if you've been following that discourse, but Ali Stuckey, and I might do an entire video about this. I probably will, actually. Ali Stuckey, she is a conservative Christian wife, mom of three.
I love her.
She's great, right? So she went on some like show or something. There was a clip circulating of her simply saying that, you know, homesteading is great, homeschooling is great, all of that stuff, but there's a difference between being trad and being biblical, and you don't need to feel bad as a wife, if you're trying to be like a Christian biblical wife, if you don't have the sourdough, you know, that's not ultimately what it's about. And she was called a feminist and all these things. And it's like, wait, what? It's
I like, love her. What? She's so smart. She's so well-spoken. I follow her. I look at her stuff every day. Yeah, it's true. It's like, pick the hill. You can't die on every hill here.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was in high school, we would drive around in my like 95 Jeep Cherokee blasting like Biggie Smalls. It's like we all listen to music that may not go with the demographic of what music we should be listening to, and that doesn't make you a bad person. And like, what they're doing a choreographed dance, who knows, it could have been like a sorority thing, right? They could be cheerleaders. It's like they learned to dance, and I'm just proud of them that they're fucking body parts aren't hanging out.
They were wearing clothes. Good job. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it's hard because I feel like there is a personality type that's attracted to conservatism, that being right wing, that is just like, frankly, more stick in the mud. And that's fine. Like, we can all have like different personalities. That's basically what this whole thing is about, in my opinion. But like when you're trying to say that you're bad because you're listening to the wrong music, like there was even this video of this dad who was lip syncing at a concert to Taylor Swift with his daughters. And he was having like a great time. You know, he was like engaged with them. And the person who shared it said, "This is not a real man," because he added Taylor Swift. I'm looking for it on X. And it's like, really? Like, this is a dad who clearly is present in his kids' lives. The reason why he knows Taylor Swift lyrics is probably because he spends so much time with them that he knows, like, this is just huge W in my opinion. But, you know, I defended him, and I had some people say like, well, no, if he were a real man, a good father, he'd be steering them toward like better music or correct it. It's just like, really? Really? And I also had like, you know, yeah. Well, she's a feminist. Like, we shouldn't be encouraging, like, worshiping Taylor Swift. And it's like, her music is pretty vanilla, and I mean that in a frankly kind of derogatory way. Like, it's like,
right,
it's not vulgar for them. Like, none of the songs I can think of, like, what, you have Shake It Off, 22, I don't know.
Some people dive deep on her. Oh, she's a witch. Like, there's no way like her talent would indicate that she has such the fan base that she has. She's casting spells. There's symbolism in her. She's an op. You could look, sure, like, there's theories on that, but like a 12-year-old girl is not looking for that or seeing that. And a dad, the best present I ever got as a kid, my brother gave me a Joey doll from New Kids on the Block. Does that make him not a real man? It's just, you're supporting your, and again, it's like people act like when we have parents literally signing their kids up to get their genitals chopped off because they have a mental issue or they're upset at their ex, you know, that's the hill to die on. That's the thing to be upset about. Not a dad taking his girls to Taylor Swift.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know, my dad and my parents, actually, to their credit, they're people who were very much like, they were interested in things because I'm interested in them, you know, like, I don't think my parents actually like are interested in, like, Green Day was the music that I liked when I was a teen. I went to like 3 or 4 Green Day concerts with my mom. I don't think she loves Green Day, but it's like she knew that I was interested, and therefore she wanted me to, and, you know, she went, and it was totally fine. I didn't get like, I was like a super nerdy Asian kid in school, so I didn't get into any trouble. I just liked the music. And, you know, I feel like there's the, again, like that very almost holier than thou attitude that can extend to the weirdest things like music. It's like, come on. Come on.
I liked Ace of Base. I liked, my first concert was Alanis Morissette.
Very sister. Cool.
And then, yeah, Bare Naked Ladies. That was exciting. Goo Goo Dolls, Foo Fighters, Counting Crows. But I wasn't into anybody real poppy. Like, I was maybe Spice Girls, but I never went to their concert. I did like a choreographed dance for like a talent show.
Love that. My first concert was with my dad, and we went to go see Cliff Richards. I don't know if you know who that is. He is like, he was kind of a babe when he was younger. He is this, let me see.
Oh God, I also liked Tool.
Yeah, he's this like British singer from the 50s. How old was I when I went to go see it? I don't remember. I went to go see him, but it was like, it was a great time. I highly recommend Cliff Richard's music, and he's also a knight. So, you know, he celebrated recently 65 years in the music business. Hang on, I'm going to share this. Wow. This is now like a Cliff Richard stan podcast. Yeah, so there he is. So it's just a great
how
time.
Wholesome.
It was very wholesome. I'm still a huge fan of his, but yeah, like let's like if we're if you're gonna say that you're like pro family, you can't simultaneously be crapping on a dad who's like spending time with his kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in terms of what you have going on with your comedy, where do you like to focus on in terms of like subject matter? You mentioned you're doing pregnant material.
Oh yeah, it's amazing how different my set has become just over the last year. And I remember there was a moment when I was at Tampa, I was doing shows at the Tampa Side Splitters, and I had that was in December. So how far along was I at that point? This was 2 months ago, more than 2 months ago. December is 3 months ago, and I'm like in my eighth month now. So what was that, six? 5 months, whatever. I remember I started my jokes with like engagement, wedding material, maybe some like used to be single material. And I'm keeping my coat on thinking like, this is how my set's going to go. And then I'm going to go into the pregnancy stuff. And I'm like holding this jacket on, hiding my pregnant belly. And then I'm getting so hot. And plus it's like, I'm breathing. I'm out of breath and 5 minutes into my set, because when you're pregnant, everything's just working harder. You're breathing harder. The blood is pumping more. Everything's just harder. And then I finally get to now I'm doing the pregnancy material of my set. I take off my jacket. I'm like, and it's like, what was the big reveal? Like I was already very much noticeably pregnant. And then it was that show. I realized I'm like, I have to just start with the pregnancy material. It's like, it's so silly to just tell other jokes, and it's like I am literally the elephant in the room. So after that show in December, I realized like I gotta just do pregnancy stuff. And so the last few headlining shows have been really like 80% like pregnancy material.
And So I'm like very pronatalist, and I feel very much that we don't have enough just like material or acknowledgement or discussion of like pregnancy, parenthood, being a mom, like what raising kids is like. And I was having a conversation with some of my friends who are still like single and, you know, not parents or anything like that. And I asked them like, when was the last time you held a baby? And they could not think of the last time they held a baby. And I feel very strongly like the willingness we each have to become parents, like it's probably correlated with the amount that we're around kids. Mm-hmm. Because I think like, if you're just someone who's only around a baby, like at an airplane, then you're probably not going to want kids, because you have a very negative, you know, opinion of babies. Like they're crying. And it's like, to be fair, we should all be crying. Like flying is a terrible experience right now, but it's like, you know, it's at their worst. They're tired. Like they had to get up for a flight. They, you know, their ears are popping. So like, I feel like a lot of the negative sentiments toward children is because like we've kind of sectioned them off from society. We're not talking about it. We don't like children. Like we don't like kids being kids in spaces. And I understand the need for like adults only stuff, but it's like, I don't know. Our culture is very adult focused, not kid focused.
One of the most common criticisms you see from typically like men are more likely to be just consume comedy in general. And you hear a lot of women aren't funny. Women aren't good stand-up comics. Ugh, like you hear that all the time. Like, but probably the most frequent compliment, I guess, I don't think women are funny ever, but you're pretty good. And it's like, sounds less and less like a compliment. And women always talk about their vaginas. They always talk about men, they're dating. Guess what? You talk about what you know. Women are so attuned to their relationships. Women are people pleasers. Women are, we're perceptive, we're empathetic, nurturing, all the strengths about us that make us great moms, great sisters, great wives and girlfriends. You know your biggest strength is also like your biggest detriment too. Mm. Right, everything's a has one side or the other. And the women, the reason why women talk about relationships so much is because that you talk about what you know. And like women are very perceptive and observational when it comes to people and then the relationships. And it's interesting that for female stand-up comics, it comes to a certain point, like it depends when it happens for you. But I noticed, especially in these like coastal cities, it's like you got to make the choice. Like, are you going to become a Chelsea Handler? Or are you going to become something else? And Ali Wong, she's probably a good example of someone. She did multiple specials, pregnant, probably has a lot of material about motherhood at this point. And it's like, you're either going to be, I hate to say like, aging sluts. It sounds horrible and very judgmental. And there's so many women who don't care to have kids or want to be moms, but it's like, you either got to stay on that path of like, yeah, fuck it. I have no desire to have kids. My lifestyle supports this. I make enough money. I can go skiing topless. I'm just going to be Sex in the City person. Or do I want to have a family? And then that material is going to change and evolve. Whereas like if you stay kind of the more accepted route of like single fun lady, a feminist, right? Like that's a nice marketable package that kind of makes sense. Like that's like Amy Schumer was that before she got married and have a kid. Although I feel like she kind of just fell off overall. But Chelsea Handler is the best example of that now. And that's like what I'm kind of, I very much transitioned, like started stand up, was single, had a lot of single jokes, had a political kind of awakening starting in 2018. So my politics changed and like just started living my life in a way that made me, that pulled me away from the establishment and the mainstream and got me ostracized from a lot of groups and people, and you're just kind of finding your own way. It's like, oh, and now I'm becoming a mom. So like all my material is changing and it's like, you're right, Lauren, because there aren't really that many women talking, like doing jokes about motherhood. Because I don't know. It's just a lot of women don't make it to motherhood as stand-up comics. Like they'll quit. The life of a stand-up is not attractive to women, just generally. And that's when people say, oh, there's not that many female comics because it's not attractive to them. You have to sink 10 years into this before you can expect a real career out of it. And they're the same 10 years that women spend starting families and finding their spouse. So you can understand why a lot of women don't want to go, yeah, I'm going to be on the road and sleep in a comedy condo instead of like going on dates and trying to start a family. It's a real gamble. There's no security in this at all. So I just feel so lucky that I was even able to find somebody who understands comedy, who also like didn't feel insecure by the attention you get as a stand-up comic who gets comedy, who you know, sees all the shit talking that happens and doesn't feel like they have to like come and white knight you for every mean tweet that they see somebody write. It's like Frank definitely has my back, but it's like you have to be so damn secure to really date anybody in the public eye, let alone a stand-up comic. My God. So it's just rough. It's a tough life and there's no security, which is why women love security, which is why you don't see a lot of women pursuing stand-up as a career.
Which is crazy because I was like reading some stuff about how men don't, like most men would have no problem dating a woman who was like chronically unemployed. Like for a lot of stand-up comics, frankly, right. would be a descriptor. So it's kind of like, but like women don't want them for themselves, but you know, a lot of the metrics of success that a woman would see in a man, it's not reciprocated. Like I've seen a lot of men say like they would prefer a woman didn't like really have a job or much of a career just so that, you know, they would have more time to stay home or, you know, devote themselves to kind of their schedule around his work and stuff like that. But we do have some super chats I want to get to. So Just Marcos with a donation. Thank you. Eldon Host says, a bundle of sticks is such a bundle of sticks way to say a bundle of sticks. No Malarkey 2024, Lauren. Simpcast, perhaps. Yeah, I do want to get Marie on a stream. We used to do a podcast back when I was in Canada. It was a lot of fun. More political oriented than we've been doing lately, but still a lot of fun. Did the Obama admin's dear colleague letter from spring 2011 do irreparable damage to gender relations? I don't even remember that. Do you?
The dear Obama
from 2011.
Oh my gosh. No, I don't remember that letter.
I'll look it up. Row House says, might be off topic, but did Chrissy hear about the self-immolation guy in front of the Israeli embassy? If Chrissy can make a joke about that, she has no equal in comedy. Does it just show more commitment?
Is it just the guy that lit himself on fire?
Yes.
I can for sure make a joke about that. I just, I have to read a little bit more into it. Because he died, right?
Yeah, no, he definitely died. I'd say like it's a great commitment to allyship. I mean, he's showing people that you don't need to be a brown person to kill yourself for the cause. So there's that.
And you don't need to be gay to be a flamer.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just making a mistake.
I'll Fight You Naked says, I'll take my 8-month-old everywhere like an ambassador. Even the most scary looking people smile and say hi, like wheeling a little ball of light around. That's what we do with our kid. Like she's not even two, but she's been on so many, like she's really good on planes right now, unless like, you know, she might like fuss a little bit if she's sleepy before, like as we're putting her down for a nap, but she will sleep on a plane. And we just like, we bring her everywhere just because she's happiest with us. And I feel like it is good for her because a lot of people complain that kids don't know how to act in public, so you shouldn't bring them out in public. But it's like, well, if they're only ever with other little kids at it, like, you know, pushed aside in a daycare, then they're not going to know how to behave with adults or in public places because they don't have that exposure. So I think it's really important to have your kids, yeah, out in public with you. Never mind, I just like being with you. Danny Nightblade says, lots of female comedians aren't funny because they don't tell jokes. They spew out hatred toward men and whites on stage and claim those are jokes. Okay, so regarding women being funny, this is my opinion because I think some of the funniest people I know have been my female friends, but I think the reason why a lot of people say
they're not doing stand up.
Right. They're not doing stand up. And I think the women who are being like pushed up in the stand up world are basically the Amy Schumer, Chelsea Handler types, where it's like they're being astroturfed because such and such agency thinks they tick boxes or they're just like a token hire, basically. So that's why I think it's a lot more fair to say that many female stand-ups aren't funny because, you know, of all these reasons, but that doesn't mean that women are funny. Also, men and women tend to have different senses of humor. So like, I know sometimes like my husband will be like laughing his head off at something on his phone and then he'll show me a video and it's like, I don't know, a guy getting kicked in the nuts or something like that. And I'm like, Right. I think
someone is stepping on a rake and it hits them in the face.
Right. That's, you know, and that's fine. You could have like humor is subjective, but I feel like it's also fair to say that, you know, women might find other women funnier and men might find other men funnier just because like we like, you know, with women, there's like a lot of observational humor that like cracks me up. And, you know, it's not something necessarily that a lot of guys would get, but that's okay. We don't have to have the same sense of humor. Alex Bex just with a donation. Thank you. And he also says, ask Chrissy about the stolen Christmas gifts.
God, this is such an overblown story. That's probably at least 5 years old at this point. I was at a Christmas party many years ago for Compound Media. There was a bag of clothes left behind from another patron. Hours had passed by. I looked in the bag of clothes and then gave them to my friend, Larry, who they happened to be his size. And that's literally it.
Okay.
Very exciting. Well,
very exciting. So Chrissy, where can people find you, keep up with you, maybe see some of your shows in person? What's the best place for them to do that?
Oh, yeah. I am going to be presenting an award at the Grifties in just a couple weeks. That's going to be Saturday, March 9th at Tiff's Ale House in Morris Plains, New Jersey. I'll also be headlining one more show before I give birth. That's going to be Friday, March 22nd at the Laughing Stock Comedy Club in Grantville, Pennsylvania. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel where I have Simcast every Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern, and I do one-on-one interviews and panel shows all the time. I'm also on Friday Night Tights every Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern on Nerdrotic's YouTube channel. Gosh, what else? Yeah, just got a lot of things in the works. Yeah, Lauren, would love to have you on Simcast sometime. You're an absolute delight and a blast. And I think that's it as far as promos. Yeah, just subscribe to my YouTube. Trying to get to 100K. I think I'm at 91K right now.
Nice. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed this, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, as well as follow both of us on social media. And don't forget, if you are a podcast person, we are on all the audio-only platforms. So basically, like wherever you get your podcasts, we are there. So don't forget.
Also, Compound Media. I have a show called The Wet Spot, Mondays, 7 p.m. Eastern on compoundmedia.com.
Awesome. Well, that's it for now, guys. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye.